Hello, my name is Amy Toy, the host of Angel Answers with Amy Toy. Besides being a radio show host, I'm also an intuitive counselor who provides spiritual insight into matters of the heart. Are you confused about your love life? Thinking of getting a new job? Wondering about your purpose and why you are here? I work very closely with not only the angelic realm, but also those who have crossed over to the other side. All sessions are strictly confidential. I also offer long-distance healing sessions using angelic energy. This angelic energy, also known as integrated energy therapy, IET, can be done through Skype or on the phone and helps you get the issues out of the tissues. For first-time clients only, I am offering a 20% discount. You can find me online on amytoyamytoy.com, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or email me at angelicamy35@gmail.com or simply call 727-514-7323. May the angels carry you through, and this is for entertainment purposes only. And good evening, everyone. My name is Amy Toy, and this is Angel Answers with Amy Toy. I have a very intriguing guest tonight. Her name is Amanda Grime. And she wears many hats, right, Amanda? Do you wear many hats?
I wear many. It's like I'm an octopus. I wear the hats on my tentacles, of course, not the heads. Like, you know where I'm going.
Yes, I do. Actually, I do. So I'm going to describe some of the things you do. You're a mental health awareness advocate. You are the author of not one but two books, Dear Prudence. And I like this one, Motherhood Made Me Get Over Myself, A Metamorphosis. You are a former English creative writing educator, and you live with bipolar depression, and you choose writing as a catharsis for that. And you are also a radio show host yourself with Dear Prudence on Blog Talk Radio. Dear Prudence, radio life advice to help you cope. Welcome, Amanda, to the show. How are you tonight?
I'm excellent. Amy, I'm excellent. Thank you so much for having me on the show. This is so much fun. Great. And actually, you know what? I am currently a 7th and 8th grade humanities educator. Can you believe that one?
I didn't know 7th and 8th graders were humane. I'm just kidding.
Well, they're not. So that's the fun part about it. In fact, there's nothing humane about them. It's like it's the biggest challenge of all is just finding the humanity in a 7th and 8th grader. Yeah, they're very cool. They're very cool. It's quite a trip. It's a little private school, and my daughter, who actually is sitting here with me, she should be in bed, but that's okay. Hello, her name is River, and she's 7. She goes to the school, and I teach. She's in first grade there, and I teach the 8th grade, and I've never taught middle school before, and so this is quite a journey. It really adds to my bubbling pot, if you will.
Your repertoire, if we will.
My repertoire. You got it. My pot of chili.
Yeah, really, right? Well, it sounds like we're going to be goofy tonight. That's good, because I'm goofy at this hour. You know, it's the witching hour for me.
So, yeah, me too.
So we got a couple things, and then you have something exciting to talk about at towards the end of the show. How viewers can get a hold, or listeners, viewers, yeah, maybe it's going to be viewers, listeners can get a hold of you. But first of all, I have some questions for you. Now, you deal with bipolar depression, which is interesting because I grew up with clinical depression.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, so describe how you discovered you had it and what does this feel like to have that? I'm just going to go and we're just going to ask questions tonight. What the heck, you know?
Yeah, let's do it. That's good. Yeah, it's such a good question because, and it will be very easy for you to relate to because you understand clinical depression, but I think in hindsight, I probably knew in those wonderful formative years that there was an issue. But I was not actually diagnosed with bipolar disorder until I was 20 years old. And how did I know? Well, I knew because of course, my uncanny ability to flip from happy to sad in a matter of seconds. Seriously, it was like it's rapid cycling, and it was just so out of control, and it seemed to be exacerbated by age. I also did a lot of self-medicating in my teens mm-hmm. and 20s, mm-hmm. And that was a huge component. You know, finally somebody said, hey, you know, maybe there's an issue you're trying to mask. And I said, no, right. no issue here.
Right.
So I... At 20 was the first time a psychiatrist actually sat me down and said, okay, this is the issue, and this is how you have to deal with it. And I did not take it seriously at that age. In fact, I took it all the extra meds as welcome additions to my evening cocktails. What can I say? Mm-hmm. It's been a very long evolution, a very long process, a very long healing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know what? Life is life, teaches us things, and the experience is the greatest teacher, in my opinion. And I feel, but we have a lot of commonalities, as I was reading through your bio and that, but we'll get into that in a moment. But when I was going through my clinical depression in my teens,
mm-hmm.
Because I grew up with two alcoholic parents, and, you know, they were beating on each other all the time and didn't know why. Gee, why would I be depressed? And it's interesting because in my journey of, you know, looking up material, I remember reading Patty Duke's biography about her experience with bipolar depression and self-medication as well. So I'm sure you could relate to that. I don't know what comes first. What do you think it does, the mental illness, or do you think the self-medication? It's like the chicken before the egg. What is your opinion on that?
Self-medication first.
Okay.
Comes before. I think you're not really inherently aware that there is an issue, and I think that I personally was trying to quell bad feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And they manifested themselves in my teenage years as like I'm not going to say bad behavior. I'm just going to say ill behavior, but more toward myself.
Mm-hmm.
And disorders, eating disorders, things like that I kept asunder and somehow kept a smile. That's the beauty of bipolar disorder. You sort of somehow keep this facade going while you have this inner turmoil. And I know that everybody can relate to this on absolutely some level or another. It's so, you know. And ironically, Amy, that was the first book I read that made me start to take things seriously. That was it. Yeah, the Patty Duke book. The doctor's like, I wanted to read something. I was like, oh, Patty Duke. They love Patty Duke. He's like, yeah. And I was probably, I would say about 25 years old when I read that. And it resonated with me. It was quite a book, and I could certainly relate. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, I saw her on a couple talk shows. I love Patty Duke myself. And in my family, there is bipolar disorder, you know, depression. On my mother's side, and of course, everybody's looking at each other like, really, it's genetic? You know, yeah, it is, dumbass.
And, what's that pink elephant in the living room?
Well, so is the alcoholism, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the drug abuse and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, but that book really opened my eyes to mental illness, even though I didn't have the bipolar, at least that's not what they told me. You're just depressed, clinically depressed. Go home, take some Prozac, and don't slit your wrist today, Amy. You know, that's what I remember. But that book was really good because, I don't know, I saw her on, I don't know if it was Oprah at the time. This was back, many, many moons ago. Many moons.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what moon it was. But it was a good book, and I liked her. I liked Patty Duke at the time, and too bad she's passed because she was a very, like you, a mental health awareness advocate, I believe, as well.
Yeah, so, yeah. She was so inspiring. She really, really, and even that in that short, you know, two decades ago, it was a real struggle for her, I think, to be that and to come out and say, look, you know, this is what I've dealt with, because still the stigma is so strong, especially on a female in the public eye. that was heavy stuff for her to be so vocal about her illness, about her addiction, about, you know, about coping. She was an amazing woman.
She was, and I love her, and I, you know, and when she passed, I cried. I actually cried. It's like, okay. I hate when that happens, but, you know, I joke I'm a psychotic psychic, but we don't know that. Anyway.
Love it.
You have to be in this business, so. How has being an advocate for you has helped you with your personally, and how do you think you've helped others with your experiences?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's like to say, I'm sure you can relate to this as well because of the because of your expertise and of your what you do to help people. It seems like every path I've taken in my life has led back to the one thing, and that is to help people.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it seems to help people of all ages, specifically kids. I feel like there's no coincidence. Of course, I know there's no coincidence that I got into education. Although creative writing is my passion, I feel like it's been very cathartic for me. To help other people is the one thing that makes me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
It truly does. And
it's
I really don't like this phrase, but it's a win-win. Not that we're talking about sports here, but it truly, kids, I can really relate to kids, especially those ones we were talking about that are so inhumane, 7th and 8th grade kids, because that was the age, that horrible middle school age where you absolutely don't know up from down. You're so concerned with your personal appearance, your popularity, things like that, that you have no way to express yourself because you're afraid of what other people think. So I, as challenging as this position that I currently have is, I feel like it's probably the best work I've done as an advocate because I can kind of pinpoint the kids who need it early on because that's when it starts to rear its ugly head. I really think it does. So it's been great and very helpful for me and hopefully for the people who I'm trying to advocate for, and those are kids at this point, definitely.
Do you feel at this stage of the game in 2018 that is there still a stigma in your opinion about mental illness?
Oh my gosh, Amy, I think it's remarkable, the stigma, but for instance, the atrocity that just happened in Florida.
Yes, home state. That's where I live.
Your
now.
Home state, yeah, that's right, that's right. So that atrocity, I mean, people, like, the fact that mental illness would even be brought up as an issue as opposed to gun control is just, I don't know, I feel like it's used as a scapegoat. I feel like it's still almost like a witch hunt. I truly do. People are branded, and it's interesting. NAMI, the National Mental Institute. Oh my God, what does NAMI stand for? Now I can't remember. NAMI, Mental Health Awareness Organization. There is a billboard, and I think it's wonderful. And I pass it every day on the way to Allentown, where we work and go to school. And it says, "I am not my mental illness." I am not my mental illness. And that is so profound and so important. And I think that is the key right there, that phrase, to start turning people's vision away from the archaic vision that mental health issues were something that you keep under lock and key. Like you were talking about with the alcoholism and drug addiction in the family. The pink elephant in the living room, you've got to let the elephant out and talk about it. Because it's not something to be held. Let's see, it's not something to be ignored. You have to deal with it, and this is what I've learned in my 44 years, that you have to deal with it like a wound. It's like having a broken ankle, or it's like having a burn. You have to heal it. You have to work with it. You have to heal it. It's like anything else. You just have to take care of it. or it's not going to go away. And it won't go away, but you can live with it. And that's what I'm all about.
Yes, it's like I'm a recovering alcoholic of 8 years, so I
have to deal with my disease.
Thank you.
Wow.
You know, it's, well, it's not. I don't feel like it's a disease. I feel like it's something that I've overcome, and I had to deal with the white elephant in the room, or well, the pink, white, black elephant, whatever the hell you want to call it, in the room, and I had to get into the surface area of why did I self-medicate. And you know, people could use, oh, I'm an alcoholic, or I got mental illness, or I've got whatever.
Uh-huh.
I love when how people say that, and I'm like, really? Is that, are you your disease? And you're not. You are more
right.
than that. It's a part of you. Something deeper manifested within you to self-medicate or whatever, you know, so I don't know.
No,
I mean, I feel sorry.
No,
yeah, I feel sorry for that guy. Yeah.
My husband is also going through the same thing, and this is fresh for him, 30 years of addiction.
Okay.
And so he, I can relate completely to, first of all, and when I say congratulations, that's such the, there's no, that is such a broad word. I mean, that's like
coming from my heart,
because I know what you're going through. And it's just.
So, I mean, no, I'm not ashamed
what
of it.
What an achievement.
Yeah, and, you know, and it's funny because I love that there's different organizations out there and, you know, like NAMI, you know, National Awareness Mental Health, and, you know, and then you have...
There it is.
Yeah, whatever. I think that's what it's called. I used to work, I worked for a non-for-profit years ago, and they would quote different stuff in them. Anyway, that's another lifetime. But I am an advocate for women for sobriety as opposed to Alcoholics Anonymous, because
awesome.
I feel women have different needs with their addiction. Women are different than men, and we're caretakers, you know, we're helpers.
Mm-hmm.
We all sometimes want to save our partners and our family, and we can't. So we have to learn to take care of ourselves before that. But that's another story. But I really, for WFS, Women for Sobriety, so we all have our little programs to help others. So.
Wow. I love your approach because, yes, women, obviously, women and men are different. Like I'm so profound there. But that is so true. Like we are... truly a different animal when it comes to addiction. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And you know, historically, it's just because we are caretakers, and it's like so. Mm-hmm. It's braided so much deeper into our core. I really feel like it is.
It is, and even I'm not trying to go on a tangent, but there is an enzyme in our body, and I can't remember. We cannot digest alcoholic men do.
I have heard that. I know exactly what you're talking about. That's really interesting.
Yes. And,
wow.
Yeah, I forgot what the heck it's called. But that's okay. My brain is, I'm 44 as well. My brain has gone on vacation.
Oh, well,
where I love.
Hey, hi, comrade. and it's the witching hour for both of us. So we're both like, duh, NAMI. and the end. Our show could be called NAMI and the Enzyme. It's like a good band name. Hi, live at the LA Palladium. It's NAMI and the Enzyme.
Yes, exactly. I like to help women alcoholics in recovery. You like to deal with bipolar and, you know, children and that. And let's go into a better subject. Let's get off of this.
No, it's awful, but you know what? You made a very bad valid point, and something that I would like to say cheers and here to, that, you know, you cannot, my whole thing with being an advocate like you are for alcoholism, women and alcohol, trying to become sober, and me, like living with, I'm sorry, I'm stumbling over my words, living with bipolar disorder is that it is imperative that people do not use their mental illness as an excuse.
Right.
It is not an excuse. You can live with it. It's like putting a cast on a broken ankle. You know what I mean? And I'm sure you can relate to that completely as well.
Yes. Oh, I'm an alcoholic or a drug addict. You know, really?
Yeah, come on.
Well,
get over it.
Yeah, what are you doing to find the root cause of it? I mean, I want to, you know.
Right.
But anyway. Which leads me to the, my next question, which is you're a writer, which is awesome, and so
yes.
am I. And
that's right. Oh, cool.
Yeah, so my question to you is, you have a your first book. I don't know if it was your first book. How does your book, Dear Prudence, mirror your own life, you think? Is life imitating art?
Okay, so that book saved me, Amy. That book was that book wrote me out of the darkest place I've ever been. So basically, I was teaching at a school in New Jersey, a high school. I was teaching creative writing and Shakespeare and theater and all these wonderful things with all these wonderful kids. And the dam finally broke one day. And I ended up having to tell my most amazing supervisor, who I'm very close with to this day, Stephanie Bell, that I had to leave. And I left. And I sat on my parents' couch, and I hid. And I was there for a good 3 months.
Wow.
It was probably the darkest place I've ever been. But as I started to heal with their help and with this amazing doctor I had, I started writing letters to people here and gone, to my nanny who had passed, and to my Graham who had passed, and to Jimi Hendrix who had passed, and to Janis Joplin who had passed, and, you know, to all these people who inspired me in life. And I started just writing my way out of this hole and just kind of asking questions and living it with like these existential questions. And as I healed and started visiting the land of the living, and I actually got a job at a restaurant and like was out in public. And, you know, this is after a 4 or 5 month period. In hindsight, I was feeling great, and I was feeling great about myself, and things were right, and I took the right meds, and I looked back, and I'm like, wow, these letters are could be the perfect premise for a book that could help a whole lot of people. I'm like, so I decided to fashion a frame story around it, and I did. And so the frame story around the letters was about Anna Gita, a girl very loosely based on a lot of my own ill experience, who was a mental ward escapee, who went on an existential journey to the Florida Keys, your home state, to meet her demise. I'm very passionate about Florida Keys. I love them. To meet her demise. And it's this quick, crazy, quirky story wrapped around the letters. And she gets out of her Rhode Island state, penitentiary. Nope, not the penitentiary. State hospital with a backpack. And in her backpack, the only thing she took with her is all of the letters that I wrote. Mm-hmm. They're in the backpack. She headed south. And on her way, she lived for the first time in her, whatever it was, 25 years or something, however old she was. And she gave away every dollar she spent, or she had. She gave away, she complimented everybody she saw. She said exactly what was on her mind. She lived without any fear of any repercussions because it was the end for her, and she couldn't wait. She couldn't wait to make it the end. Unbeknownst to her, 1 inch above her reality or our reality in the book, there was another frame story going on. And the story was being told, is being told by an angel by the name of Gabriel, not the Gabriel per se. But I sort of picture this Gabriel as like, let's see, well, he wears Chuck Taylors, he smokes more 120 cigarettes, those really long brown ones. And
yep.
And he was assigned to her at birth by a spider woman named Mother Fate, who is the godlike deity. Mm-hmm. And Mother Fate weaves the tapestry that weaves us all, or creates the tapestry that weaves everything and anything together. And there's a knot, and she hires, quote-unquote, Gabe, before Anna is born, to keep her alive. Because the knot in the tapestry can't be there because her life depends, or so many other lives depend on her.
Mm-hmm.
And so should I keep going?
Go ahead, honey.
All right, so here we go. So, that story is going on. That's Gabriel is narrating the story. You never know who's narrating until Gabriel's a shapeshifter, so he's in and out of her life from the day if she's born. But this is the pinnacle. This is the moment where he has to step in and stop the action. So what happened is he manifests himself as many different things, and when she makes it to the Bahia Honda in the Florida Keys, and with her bottle of George Dickel, it's like a generic Jack Daniels, and her pack of Camels, and dances her way across the beach to a spot in the beautiful Gulf to submerge herself and say goodbye happily. This is what she wanted. Unbeknownst to her, Gabriel is working his magic, and there's another guy who's on the island in his own therapy. I don't want to give too much away, but he is watching her almost like a voyeur. Like, what's this chick doing? What's going on? Watching, and he watches her go to the water, to this beautiful spot, this spot of sunlight in the water, and go under, thinking she's just having a good time, and realizes she's not coming up. And he goes to find her. He pulls her from the water. She's half gone, but she's not gone. And she's taken away, and she's in a coma. And he has her backpack full of the letters. And his unearthing of the letters tells her story and how he is connected to her and how it's all connected.
Cool. You know, for me, when I write my books, too, I take it when I was younger, I put my characters through hell. I mean, really through hell. And I have a reoccurring character that's a mafia godmother. And she is one of the coolest people. That's my fictional. But now I've been writing my autobiography for years. You can ask my editor, Chris. And but now I'm writing about my journey with holistically approaching the alcoholism. So I'm writing that book right now. So I could help people. Like, your book is going to help others, too, or it has helped others, you know. So I think it's really cool. Yeah, but it's really cathartic.
That's fantastic.
It's really cathartic, right. It's really cool. It's really cathartic. It helps you heal. And it helps you realize that, you know what, I'm not so screwed up as much as I thought I was.
Right. It does. It justifies everything. Really, it's cathartic is the word. It's like it was the catharsis. It got me out of a hole, and and there it is. And then I had my daughter River, who is the biggest blessing in my life. And after I had her, I wanted people to understand. I kept a blog while I was pregnant called Pendulum Pregnancy. And that's where the book Motherhood Made Me Get Over Myself, A Metamorphosis, came from. Because I had never, ever realized how self-absorbed it was until I had this beautiful life in my arms and realized, like, wow, you know what? This is what it's all about, and this is my purpose. I'm here to help, and I'm here for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually we agree to bring a child or two or three over. I've decided not to have children. I have cats instead, and they're worse than kids.
I've got them, too, and dogs. Love them all.
I love them all, but I reached it about 10 years ago. Before I got sober, I decided I wasn't going to have any kids. And I just never really had that inclination. I give you credit because knowing me, I would homeschool a poor kid. They would be, you know, the center of my universe. But my purpose to me is bigger than anything else.
No, I got it. believe me, it's life-changing.
Yes.
But I wanted people to know. I mean, when I told my psychiatrist that I was pregnant, he went into mourning. Like, no, you know, like, how are you going to do this? And I experienced some incredible things. I had to go through electroconvulsive therapy and you know, to forego medication. That was really helpful, and I have taken a much more holistic, quote unquote, approach to medicating as well as a result. And so I write all about that and how you can do this. Like, get rid of the stigma. Like, it's the best thing that ever happened to me personally, you know. So
okay. Yeah, let me go back. Explain to people who don't know about ECT or electric shock therapy, what is it?
Okay. It's shock therapy. So what they do is, some people opt to do this for a reason, because it actually, I've never in my life, it's the most horrific thing I've ever experienced. And we live in a day when it's not archaic like it was at one time, and I can't even imagine what it was like 100 years ago. I'm sorry, I'm going to say 25 years ago even. So what it is, it's electroconvulsive therapy. And what psychiatrists use it for is people who do not react to medication and can't find any relief. Essentially, they anesthetize you, and they hook you up to electrical impulses to your brain, and they shock those parts of the brain to shock you into submission, essentially. And people who are not reacting to medication, sometimes they find relief in that, although it has a deleterious effect on many other facets of their life, such as their memory.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, from that period in my life, I don't remember a lot of things. And it was a very short period, because I opted out quickly, because I knew it. It felt counterintuitive, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, nothing is worth this. No, nothing at all. Mm-hmm. I can, you know. So some people think it's a very positive experience for some people. A lot of people find relief because all they want is just to forget. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. I was watching something over the weekend. The actress, the late Carrie Fisher, opted for that at one point.
Oh, yeah, Carrie Fisher. She was something else. Oh, she went through hell.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. I didn't.
And
yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, she did, and she and a lot of people. Who Olivia Dukakis? I read her book. A lot of people found a lot of relief, but for me, it was not for me, and I find it to be so invasive to the soul. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it hurt. It hurt the soul. And for mine, I don't know why I'm saying the, I meant mine. Like it was completely counter it just felt wrong for me. So I hope that the people who do use it and use it to find relief, it's a good thing. But for me, it was not. And I write a lot about that. And it was all so that I could have a healthy baby, because I was afraid, I was taking medication and since then I have not had to take as much medication. It's like her birth was like a rebirth for me as well.
Aww, that's really nice. That is so cool.
It is cool.
That's
and she
awesome.
Should be in bed right now, and she's sitting here with me. And I'm talking like she's not here. And she's looking at me like, Mom, here, I'm going to say hello.
Say hi.
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 Got a little squeak. Hi. I'm teaching her. She said, I'm teaching her, which is pretty remarkable. But I'm pretty, this is pretty a good example. I'm really transparent about it because I'm an advocate. I'm like, come on, man. You can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What, sweetheart? Okay. And you can do this. So that's what I'm here for. And I feel like I have a world of ill experience and knowledge like you to share, to just help mm-hmm. people through. Just give them a hand, you know? Be like, you can do this. It's okay.
Yep. And we are in such, my guides, my spirit guides, angels, whatever, keep saying we're in amazing times. And I'm like, really? What are you guys smoking up there? Okay, really? They're like, no. Because there's so many things coming into the open, even more than 10, 15 years ago. And we're being awakened and ascended and all that bullshit. But, you know, that's
uh-huh.
what they say. But I love that because Yeah, she looks. She feels like an advanced soul river. She really does.
Oh, she is. She's sitting. I mean, she is just like. Yeah, I mean, if you're picking up anything from the guy, like she's just. She's quite a person.
Mm-hmm.
And
she
just said to me, "Should I be going to bed?" Yes, mm-hmm. You should be going to bed in this river. But this is so much fun. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. Did you feel bringing her into this world? Were you afraid that is your bipolar genetic? Is in my mother's side of
it? Oh yeah. And absolutely, and it's not really funny, but it is funny, and I think you'll find the humor in it, Frank, because of his addiction, and then because of my shtick, we're like, maybe they canceled each other out, and we've created this being of complete and utter contentment. So I don't, you know, of course that's crossed my mind a million times, but you know what? It can be done. You know what I mean? And I'm the perfect person to hold someone's hand if it's something that they have to deal with, she has to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know. I have my mom's sister. She was in the mental institutions back in the 50s and 60s.
Oh,
and we
God.
Found out that all three of her children are, well, one was addicted, and she died of a drug overdose.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And the other two, well, they're both addicted to something. They're all three of them, but there's bipolar depression with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this big secret. And I would be like, are you kidding me,
well,
Mom? You know?
It blows my mind. And that had a lot to do with the book Dear Prudence, the letters I wrote to my nanny, Edna DeGraw. She was the best. She's my grandma, who I miss very much. But she undoubtedly was bipolar, but it was never diagnosed. She was she was born in 1909, so she was. It was there were times my mom said when my mother was born, she wasn't there for the first 6 months of my mother's life, and it was just hush hush. Yep, like they just threw her away, lock and key, in some institution, and she had to deal with it and like cry around corners. You know what I mean? It was just it's such a sad state, and I to think that she had to go through that, it breaks my heart. And I thought about that a lot and wrote about it a lot, like, oh God, you couldn't say, you couldn't explain, you couldn't share, you're afraid, you know, and just like, what a miserable state to be in. So you know what, thank you guys. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's the greatest of times, but if we are quote unquote ascending, you know, at which we are, and I agree, it's all like BS terms, it's funny, right? But it's true. Isn't it great that we will have a platform and people will start to open their eyes?
Yes, and that's why I have the show. And also, you have your own show.
I do.
Blog Talk Radio. Tell us about that.
Well, okay. I've had it for quite a few years. When I had River and I wasn't working, I decided, hey, like, I've discovered Blog Talk Radio, and I thought, how am I going to market my book? Very ambitious, like you. And I thought, hey, I need a radio platform. Now, first of all, I love radio, and all through college, I was a DJ. I love music. And so it was like, oh, this is perfect. So I started doing this Blog Talk Radio, which accrued, you know, some people. I had friends who were calling in and things like that. But then I started to get a following, and so I started taking it really seriously. And although it's not serious at all, in fact, it's downright crazy and unpredictable and eclectic and all that stuff. It's really the feedback I've gotten from it is that it's helped a lot of people, because I do, I experimented a lot on myself with homeopathic remedies.
Okay.
So people knew, like, I used natural lithium salts instead of lithium at one point to try to, like, to see what it would do. And I'm not condoning this at home, but I was doing it because it was my shtick. You know what I mean? I wanted to help people see if they worked. And then I would give them the blow-by-blow of what works. I would explain ECT. I would have people on. I have psychics on. I have people with different special interests. Always music, and I still do. Now, for the last year, I had a bit of a I fell off a bit. But I've hopped back on. Like, I used to do them quite frequently, my shows, and I hadn't done one for quite a few months. But I just recently did one where I talked about the Four Agreements.
Okay, yep.
And and I did a soundtrack to for my students, for eighth grade students that graduated last year. It was kind of a gift to them, and talking about the Four Agreements and how they can benefit from that. So, yeah, Dear Prudence Radio, Life Advice to Help You Cope was definitely started as an endeavor to sell books and just make the best of what I had to offer, and it's really been a blast, as you know.
It is. I love my show, man. I took a break from it for a while and did some other things, and I said, I called BBS Radio. I said, Don and Doug, I want to get back on here. And I'm doing different formats. I don't usually do something like this about mental health awareness or other things, but I want to broaden my scope.
Which completely goes along with, as you know, which completely goes along with, like, what you do. You are a healer. You're here for people. So if to bring up that facet is just combining the two beautiful worlds, you know?
Yep, that's why I joke around. I'm a psychotic psychic, and I used to have a friend. Don't say that about yourself. I'm like, look, dude, if you knew the people I know in the industry, they could be mental ill. They could have some mental illness as well. So, you know, it's a two-edged sword. So, in my opinion,
it really is. I really like the psychotic psychic. I think that should be the name of your book. Why not? I mean, seriously,
I'm writing many books, you know, there's many stories I can tell, and I'm going to go by subject matter, so that's going to be probably one of the things.
One I pick up off the shelf, because like you, I get it. Sometimes when you tell people, I'm sure you experience this, the things that you experience, the things that you think, and you're like, what? Where is this person coming from? Like, is she... are you medicated? Like, where's the lock and key? You know, they think you're absolutely insane, and you're like, no, it's just the reality of my reality. So this is the way it is.
Yep.
And
my father passed away in 2013, and he's come through in spirit so many times, saying, I never understood her until now, because he didn't. He's like, what the hell? You know, I have a kid that wants to read books and write books, and now she's seeing things and hearing things. The hell, you know, my mother's like, I got this one because my grandmother was her, but that's where she got these gifts from. My father's like,
wow, that's so cool that your dad is like, I get it, thank you.
Yep. Wow. He was an interesting guy. I mean, he was very tough, but I feel like he had mental illness as well. He suffered from depression, and I think he self-medicated with the alcohol. And so when I went into recovery and I told him, I said, you know, Dad, I'm in AA. At the time, it was AA. And he goes, well, I don't need medication. My mom's looking at him like, yes, you do, dumbass. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't need anything. Yeah, Dad, you need some help. But anyway, he's getting on the other side.
he definitely is. Wow.
But,
do you still communicate with him quite a bit?
Yes, I do. He's really helped me open doors that I'd never thought was possible. You know, he's helped me more on the other side. I think that's, I'm an ex-Catholic, but I think that's his penance for all the shit he put me through.
I love it.
He was a character, like I said. I used to say, Square, you're from a Stephen King novel. It.
Oh,
we don't know what it is. What are you? He would just look at me like, what the hell? So, anyway. Yeah, he was a great guy. So, motherhood, how do you feel balancing everything as a woman? How is that for you right now with doing all the tricks of the trade or the jack of all trades? How do you balance everything?
I have no idea. I really don't.
I don't know.
I have no clue. I don't know.
Well, it's okay.
I do it for her. I do it for her. And that is definitely my main incentive, because I want a sense of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, as many struggles as I've had with my husband because of his addiction, we have held it together, and he's really supportive because he understands. So although he does have the male condition that is, I don't do anything, that condition, that one,
yeah.
That is so inherent in many males, and I mean that with all due respect, I swear mothers did this to their sons, but they just like don't have it innately in them to pick up the pieces sometimes. He's there as a emotional support, and he is a really awesome dad. So that helps tremendously. So I have an amazing family. I have my mom and dad and my sister and niece and nephew and all that jazz are just really great people. And they're just really supportive. They have helped me through so much. I don't know what I would have done without them. Really. It's true.
I have the opposite. I walked away from my family after my father's death because I felt I had to, because they were destroying me personally. I didn't have that support. It was kind of like, you're an alien, Amy, because, you know, you have your own business, you're a psychic healer, you make your own money, and you don't want to stay in a relationship that's not healthy. Total opposite of what they are. So it's interesting when I look back on my journey, is that it takes a lot of strength to stay in the family, but it took more strength to get out of it. I'm a lot happier, but I'm grateful that you have that. You know, part of me wishes I had that, and a part of me is, like, so happy that I'm out of that. So.
I can only imagine. I am I count my blessings.
Yeah.
As far as that's concerned, I really do. Like, I can't imagine, because it's really, you know, it's been tough.
It's been really tough. It can be, but then you look at, like, okay, bondage versus abuse. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You look at that. Yeah, funny thing is, I'm originally from New York, and you were talking about your grandmother or your nanny, Grammy, was in a mental institution. My aunt used to go to a mental institution, and I found out the name where it was. And I used to go through this town. It's called Gowanda, New York, which is south of Buffalo. And they closed down, I think, in 94. They went to the correctional facility, 1982. My mother would just talk about how Aunt Judy would go away for a few, you know.
I know. Isn't it amazing? She's going away for a while. What happened to Edna? She's gone again.
Yeah, she's gone mentally. Now she's physically gone. We need to get her back if we can.
Right.
And,
it's like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest stuff. It's really incredible.
Have you ever watched the miniseries? I mean, this is back in 93 because there was Black Awareness Month last month. Queen from Alex Haley's
Queen. What was it called?
Alex Haley's Queen. The Queen.
No, I haven't.
Okay. She went to a mental institution. It was back in the late 1800s, 1870s, 1880s.
Oh, God.
And how barbaric it was.
Uh-huh.
So when you brought very barbaric and very archaic, and every other word you want to use to describe the inhumane treatment of people back then. So it was just enlightening. I remember watching it back in 93 when it first came out with Halle Berry. But that's a good movie to maybe miniseries to educate people with.
Wow, I'm going to check that out. That would be really great to explain to kids. Like, they don't get it when I explain to them things like how, they're like, what? They would give a woman a hysterectomy? I'm like, that's hysterical, hysterectomy, Latin. I'm like, yeah, lunatic comes from, you know, and I tried to explain, like, wow, I don't believe that. That would be something good to show as reference, and really shocking, but good and important.
It would.
So thank you.
They would do, like, was it one of the Kennedy women, girls, Rose?
Yes.
Rose?
We took Kennedy. Oh, the
lobotomy.
One that nobody talked about.
a lobotomy. She had a lobotomy, which is the frontal
yep.
lobe of the brain, I think, and they removed that.
Yep.
Because of
Isn't
her.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Issue. Yeah, it's so archaic. It's so barbaric what we did. I mean, how far we've come
Discussing.
With medications and everything. And wow.
And that's something I feel really important talking about. Like I've done too much medication. I've done the self-medicating. I've done no medication at all. And I truly, like, I take very limited. It's like, I call it maintenance.
mm.
And it works. And I think it's so important that people understand that if there's something out there that can help mm-hmm. them. And you have to remember, if it is chemical, that you have to fix it, the chemical aspect of it, and
right.
not to be afraid
right.
of that part.
Right. So,
you know,
bipolar depression is where there's a lack of lithium in the brain or something.
You got
like
it.
That, or?
Yeah.
Okay. And
it's
the
like,
clinical depression
so,
is serotonin, if I remember correctly.
You got it. You got
okay.
it. So, and you know, I've taken the Dear Prudence exams, a lot of that, because all the medication I was taking while I was working my way through those letters, I talk about
yeah.
in the letters, and so you get a lot of side effects and what they are in antipsychotics and anticonvulsants and all of these things. And I, you know, the bottom line is, I only need very minimal. But it is, I always, when someone says, well, I don't want to take the medication anymore, I'm like, please don't stop, because I know what happens when you stop. You think you feel better, so you stop taking the medication, and that's when really, really, really awful things happen. You know, you have to talk to somebody about it first. It's just, you know, it's just a fine line. It's like taking care of any other medical ailment, you know? It's like you
it
have
is.
Bad kidneys, you have dialysis. You have a chemical imbalance, you take a supplement for that. It's like,
right.
like anything else, and it does not need to be stigmatized because it's weird.
No, it doesn't.
Really?
And
no.
Well, Amanda, we're running out of time, but you have a special campaign that our listeners can get involved with. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. Oh, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about that. This is a big
no
deal.
No problem.
This is a really,
yeah.
really big deal for me. Okay, so I started a GoFundMe campaign recently because I'm trying to raise money to take my two books to another platform. Okay, so there's a press called Stratton Press out of Wyoming, and they're very interested in republishing Dear Prudence as a new adult novel. And just playing with Motherhood Made Me Get Over Myself, Metamorphosis, the self-published. So mm-hmm. playing with that. But they're like an in-house, it would be an in-house agent, editor, publisher, et cetera, et cetera. It's just a really good opportunity for me to be on a much larger platform so I can help more people. And so I started a GoFundMe to see if I could raise the funds so that I can do this, because I cannot do it without the funds. So, because it's my life mission to help and mm-hmm. to be an advocate. And although education is wonderful, I would love to be able to do it through books at a much higher frequency.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And so the GoFundMe, you could look up GoFundMe and my name, Amanda Grime, AmandaGrieme, and read about it. And if it's something that resonates with you, or if you know somebody who would appreciate it and might be interested in donating anything, I don't care what it is, it would be anything and everything is appreciated, I would love it. And,
cool.
and I thank you. And it's thank you in advance for supporting my cause.
Oh, no problem. I mean, education and, you know, awareness is what I hope to bring to the world. Is, you know,
yeah.
We are in amazing times. They keep saying that. And I'm like, really? I told you guys, stop smoking what you're smoking up there.
Anyway. Or share it, would you?
Yeah.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend.
So, Amanda, where can people find currently your books? Amazon?
Okay.
And, yep.
Okay. Dear Prudence is no longer, part of the reason I'm doing this is Dear Prudence is no longer in print, but you can buy the Kindle version.
Okay.
But I'm a different, yes, so you can buy it on Amazon. And on Amazon, you can also purchase either the paper copy or the Kindle version of Motherhood, Baby, Get Over Myself, Metamorphosis. And you can find me on Dear Prudence Radio, life advice to help you cope as well.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on tonight. This has been a great discussion. I enjoyed this.
Oh, Amy, it has been my pleasure. What a treat, and it was so cool to get to know you and hear about your life, and I can't wait to talk again.
Definitely. Well, everyone, my name is Amy Toy with Angel Answers with Amy Toy. May the angels carry you through, and have a great night.